listening to the Ringside Podcast.
Sitting at ringside.
The show that brings you all that is pro wrestling, news, interviews, and opinions.
Oops, I'm breaking the fourth wall.
With Daniel Spencer.
The most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
Jeremy Wallman.
I'm the best in the world at what I do.
And Justin Kruger.
Your arms are just too short to box with God.
And now, let's ring the bell and start the show.
Welcome to the Ringside Podcast. I'm Daniel Spencer.
I'm Jeremy Wallman.
And today we have two special guests.
Well, we have a co-host, a guest co-host.
A guest co-host.
And a guest.
And a guest. Yeah, there you go. Well, I like that. But it's like Randall-fied, right?
It's Randy Mania, right?
Randy Mania. There you go. We got OVW's own Randall Floyd.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
How you doing?
And we're not worthy, really.
We're not.
Yeah, the real deal. Call him by his name. Stop being a
Go ahead. Go ahead.
He's the real deal, Randall Floyd.
He is. And our special co-host today is another Randy of OVW's, Randy Royal.
Is this thing on?
It is on.
It is on.
Right, it's all
and
about.
Damn it, will you please former OVW heavyweight champion, Randy Royal.
Well, you know, that's your job. That's your job. But he's a Ringside podcast alum. He's been on the show before. So, you know, this is great stuff. He's part of royalty, right?
Yeah.
Literally, royal. Yeah.
I wish they would just pull your mic sometimes.
Well, you have the button right there. You want me to mute myself?
Please.
All right. So, Randall, we appreciate you coming on. Randy, you as well.
Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. I hope we're going to get confused here. We'll just say Floyd and Royal. Is that what
we're
going to
do?
All right.
Two Randys, what could go wrong?
No RKOs. No, that Randy's not around. Right. So.
Oh, my God.
All right. What?
It's almost like Ricky Chevy is here.
Right.
No.
Right.
He's there in spirit.
If Ricky Chevy was here, he'd be putting himself over saying he's the one that does RKOs.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Been looking forward to this episode for a couple weeks now. I touched base with Randall probably about a month and a half ago,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
something like that, man.
And I went on vacation and come back, and I've been busy. I haven't done like a couple shows. I've done the last few with you.
Yeah.
But I'm just glad to be back.
Well, here's the thing.
And to actually finally be surrounded by talent.
Here's the thing. I'm a little disappointed. I'm kind of pissed off at Michael PSAs. Or BSAs, I guess. Because we were going to have an OVW champion on the show. And then we've had an OVW champion.
I know,
but I mean a current champion. And he goes and cheats and pisses me off.
Well, I didn't like. I've been. If you listen to the show two weeks ago. I said that when he came in, he would be the OVW heavyweight champion. And it took Michael Hayes trying to get a leg up on the competition. To get that done, and I don't appreciate that as a fan.
Well, you know, so Randall, how do you feel about that? Like, come on! I mean, you should be the champion right now.
I feel too. It's just extremely disappointing. There was a whole lot of tomfoolery there at the end. Justin Smooth ended up kicking me in the face, and then I hit. Of course, I hit Hayes with the cutter and cover him for at least 15 seconds. But the ref has been down at that point, so he doesn't see any of this.
See, I should be the referee because I would have counted that.
You'd have been just fine, right?
I would have been just fine. Last time I refereed the show, it was just fine.
God. He's always Randy. Doesn't he always try? He either name drops or tries to put himself. He complains about Chevy putting himself over.
Well, I'd be the greatest referee in the world. John Cena rules.
Hey, like, that's all said that.
If he dropped panties like he dropped names, he would be a stud.
And that's the farthest from the truth. Sorry.
Don't know about that. All right. So
we're talking about girls.
So, that was kind of pissy, honestly. It really was.
It really was. It was a real rough situation. As you can see, my eye's still a little busted up from first Justin Smooth's foot, and then, of course, Michael Hayes' leg. Both caught me right across the eye. Didn't feel very good still, but we're coming along. But now, yeah, we're stuck in we've got four guys now battling for this OVW heavyweight championship, and it's going to be some real exciting stuff, I think.
So is there have they announced a Fatal 4-Way? Is that what's coming up, or is it?
Right now, we're stuck in the middle of a round robin between Justin Smooth, Ryan Howe, and myself.
Okay.
Justin Smooth and I, we had that first round robin this past Wednesday for our OVW TV taping, which you'll get to see this Saturday, what happened there. And then, of course, they named the actual number one contender for the OVW Heavyweight Championship. So you guys will get to see that here come Saturday morning.
Yeah. All right. So
this will actually air Thursday. So this will be after, just so there's no confusion out there in podcast land.
This actually will be after it airs, because it's going to air. We're recording this tomorrow. It'll air. So this will be after it airs. So you can actually go ahead and name who it is if you want.
Okay. Yeah. So they went ahead and we had Justin Smooth and I. We had our match there at the main event of OVW TV. And, of course, a lot of back and forth. Justin Smooth ended up landing that boot again, put me down. So I'm down one in this round-robin tournament. So it's going to be Ryan Howe and us and myself here come the next Wednesday for that continue that round-robin. So apparently I've got to win out to be able to get myself in contention there for the OVW Heavyweight Championship. But as we found out after the match, Michael Hayes came out and said that none of us we're going to get that OVW number one contendership. But nobody knew who was the number one contender. So we're sitting there waiting. And, of course, the Void comes out. And Amon announces that he is the number one contender.
Wow.
For the OVW television. Or, I'm sorry, the OVW Heavyweight Championship. So a lot of twists and turns.
It is.
At OVW
it is.
Right now.
It, well, you know what, though? The one thing about OVW is I've been excited because for a while there, we've talked about it on the show, it got kind of stale.
It did.
And I think that was because, honestly, I just felt like the direction they were going and who was in charge, you know, they were wanting out. And luckily, they got a buyout. And since Al Snow has bought the company, it's been a completely turnaround.
Well,
I think it started. I won't go that.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I'm not just saying this because he's here, but within the last 8 months, with the addition Randall Floyd, yeah, Logan James, even, and I'm not a huge fan, but I like his gimmick, DL3. I like that, the whole production, you know. Mm-hmm. I know you don't really know much about it because you only follow one product. But
whatever.
I had to, you know, bury you whenever I can.
Yeah.
And then even with Stu turning into Amon, that's been very, very interesting. And all that kind of happened beforehand, but they have set the momentum up for this ownership change and for it to keep going. I still don't know how skid marks keep showing up on my TV. I don't really appreciate that. But if you're listening, I'm sorry. I don't like you. But still.
So, now, Randy, how do you like, – I know you brought talked about this when you were on the show before, about these young guys coming in and getting to work with these guys and, you know, I guess – showing them the ropes, teaching them things. How you know, what has been happening, like you said, the last 8 months and what the direction is going in. How do you feel about the OVW now?
Athletically, we have probably the best locker room we've had in five to 10 years.
Yeah.
Legit.
Yeah.
Legit. Like, I was there when we had Crimson,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of the TNA guys. And, like, I mean, as much as I like those guys, this new group of dudes who are coming in, it's like I believe they love the business a little more than some of the,
mm-hmm,
some of the developmental talent that we used to have. These guys really love the business. So when you get people who actually give a shit about the business, and then when they get in the ring, it honestly shows, because they're going to put the effort in, they're going to put the work in, and then they learn from their mistakes. So,
and I feel like the women too. The women, I mean, they seem to be more. Where before they were just kind of eye candy, and maybe a little match. But I feel like the women's division now, even in OVW, has stepped up a lot than it used to be.
We probably have the best women's division that we've had in, mm-hmm, quite a while.
Would you say since Katie Lee, Burchill, and all of them were down there? I can't remember who else was down there with her, but it seemed like she was having like ladder matches for the. I wish I didn't know we would talk about this, evidently, but it was like Katie Lee and like two, and they were like battling every week, and it was phenomenal wrestling. I'm sure that's probably
honestly, and if we're shooting here, I'll be honest with you. I think we're not there yet, but I believe we're definitely on par with about the era where we had Taylor Hendricks,
mm-hmm,
and the Blossoms and that group. Yeah. I would say we're at that level. So once we go a little further than that,
yeah,
and we start doing better stories and mm-hmm. better.
And I think it's going to get. I see Al's bringing in, because Haley Shadows was brought in here recently, and so I see a lot of, he's bringing in some other talent too, and he has the connections to open up that door to bring more in,
right?
And not that Danny didn't have the connections, but it's a different era, different time frame, yeah. You know, just like, you know, Vince and Triple H, and you know, Triple H does more with the NXT and the product's better than the main roster. Everyone usually seems to agree with that.
But that's a great point, though, about the, because I forgot about the blossoms and yeah. that was a great time.
It was. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, and I think you're saying this as well. Not only do they need better stories, but they need to have TV time ever. We don't just need to see them backstage. Like I've noticed, I watch every week, and like they don't wrestle every week, but sometimes we only see them backstage. We need to see it like a match every week, I think.
Well, the thing is, and I know
you don't always have the time to do that.
That's a good point, but at the same time, that's where you have to show up to the actual TV taping.
Right.
You have to show up to the live events, because there's a lot that you don't see.
Right.
Because they try to make sure that they have those girls on every show.
Yeah.
So just because you don't see it on the TV doesn't mean they didn't go out busting.
You're right.
And the TV
you're
taping right. is just like a WWE TV taping. You get more than just what you're there for the show.
Oh,
you
know? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's more.
I think
matches
we tape an hour's worth of TV, and it's about a 2 hour show.
2 hour show.
So, yeah.
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 And so, Randall, when did you first hear or know about OVW, like starting the wrestling business? When did you come up, you know, when did that come into your, what's the word I'm looking for?
No, I'm going to let you down. So I'm not going to help you at all.
When did it come into your radar? There you go.
OVW came onto my radar, I'd say, around 2007, 2008.
Okay.
Junior, senior in high school around then, and I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling has always been the dream since I can remember, but I ended up getting a wrestling scholarship to wrestle at the University of Indianapolis, so I ended up taking that instead of jumping straight into professional wrestling from there, which I think was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Just as far as athletically, if I would have started straight out of there, I don't think I would been able to kind of get where I am now, I suppose, as quickly.
Yeah.
Without that sort of experience, that extra coaching, that putting in that sort of work, college wrestling it was hell. It was a completely different world
right.
than what it was high school wrestling for. It was year round for me since middle school, but you know, getting into college, it's a full time job.
Right,
being a wrestler, we're on the wrestling mat, you know, 7-8 hours a day doing something. So OVW was always on the radar. You always heard about it from, you know, guys like John Cena, Randy Orton, Lesnar. They all came through there, and you always heard of Rip Rogers and that he was mm-hmm. an Indiana guy. So I always kind of knew of Rip Rogers and wanted to get down here and really make that happen for myself.
So what year was that when you started, like, transitioned to, I want to train to be a professional wrestler from the college wrestling?
Just this past year.
Oh, okay, okay.
So... I
wow. So hold on, just a year? You've been you? I mean that's
the shit I was telling you guys when I was
yeah.
here.
I mean, I've seen many of your matches, and you do not look green. You know, like that's what wow, that's unbelievable. Like that's yeah. that's impressive.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to Rip really kind of took me under his wing.
Yeah.
Almost immediately. First day of beginner's class, so I was with Matt Capitelli, training with him that very first day. I went up and introduced myself to Rip and started talking to him. Actually, it was the very first person I saw when I walked there, and that was pretty intimidating to meet Rip. I'm sure you guys have met Rip and the kind
yeah.
of person he is. He can be pretty in your face, and that's exactly what he was. So really intimidating, but I guess built up the courage to go talk to him again after Matt's class, and I kind of gave him my background, what I'd been doing. Told him that I wrestled in college, let him know my athletic background, and immediately he invited me into his advanced program. So I'm taking the beginner's class in his program the very next day.
Wow.
So we do Saturday morning practice with Matt, and then immediately after that is Rip's class. So that very next day, Sunday morning, I drive back from Indianapolis. And I'm there for, you know, six or so hours training with those, training with Matt, and then of course jumping in there with Rip, with all the guys like, Trevor Steele at the time, Justin Smooth, Logan James, mm-hmm. Kevin Giza, all those guys in there, yeah. that jumping in with all of them was just, I don't know, it was something different. But
right.
it was able to, it gave me the opportunity to really progress really quickly. And I guess OVW wasn't technically my first start in yeah. professional wrestling. So straight out of college, I ended up moving to California. Me and a friend moved out there straight out of college, and I came across, it was called SoCal Pro Wrestling down in San Diego, okay. and that's where we were sitting at. And I saw it in some ad online for SoCal Pro Wrestling. I checked it out, and they just started like a beginner's class with them. So January like 3rd of maybe 2014, something like that, I started working with them. And I got about a month into it, and I tore my ACL, LCL, MCL, and both meniscus in the same fall. Mm. So about a 3-year recovery. Here we are now at OVW. So I guess I kind of got to start there, but I really didn't get a whole lot of time in. And we went over like chain wrestling.
Who was leading that class?
So back there, see, it was Jeff Dino runs SoCal Pro Wrestling, and he was training. Anthony Idol was there training us. Mike Camden, okay. Jew Diz, just a few different guys out there that I can think of off the top of my head.
Now, is that SoCal Wrestling? Do they have a history of like putting anybody in the big league, so to speak, or
like what was the guy's name that was Alberto Del Rio's ring announcer?
Roberto Rodriguez.
Yeah. I think he went through there.
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah. That's it. I know that he went through there. They had like a 10-year anniversary show maybe 2 years ago. Okay. I kind of still follow it, and he was there, and he wrestled, had a match, all that good stuff.
He wrestled too.
Yeah,
he
was, they get Rey Mysterio in there every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Ultimo Dragon, I think, was there not too long ago. So they're still kind of. I mean, it's indie wrestling, and they, you know,
yeah.
indie for what it is, but they do kind of have a little bit of a training facility. I know they
it sounds more like lucha style too, because the people you've named is all considered a lucha.
Yeah,
background.
They actually taught lucha there too. So okay. it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We would do, you know, standard wrestling, kind of straightforward American wrestling, I guess. And yeah. then Thursdays we'd come in and do lucha. So it's the same stuff, just backwards now. So I learned a little bit of lucha, and I still try to incorporate a little bit, some quicker stuff, especially with guys like Logan James, where you have to be quick.
Yeah, right.
That really came into play for me, even the short amount of training I got with it. That probably got a total of maybe 20 sessions in before I ended up getting hurt. And then, of course, sat out 3 years. So it was just all a matter of getting my mind right and rehabilitating and getting myself back to where I wanted to be. So I ended up moving closer back to home, moved back to Indiana. And then once I was, I got my ACL surgery December of 2016, and then by April, I believe, I was training with Matt.
Wow.
And eventually got my first match there at the end of July with OVW, so July of 2017.
I'm sorry. How tough was that on you mentally? Because as a former football player, I played for University of Louisville, and my freshman year, I tore my ACL, MCL, and PCL in my left knee. Had to have surgery. I was out for a year, and about a year, maybe 13 months, I don't remember. And on the very first day of practice, I overcompensated. I was running a route, and I tore my right ACL and MCL. So I went through about 3 years of recovery, and I just remember the first injury was tough, but that second one coupled onto it, mm-hmm. right when I thought I was about to get back to doing what I loved, I was never the same on the field. Talk to us a little bit about how that affected you, how your injury affected you mentally.
Mentally, for the longest time, it was very disheartening. When it happened, I was out in San Diego, and I was immediately rushed to the hospital. They pulled out like the size of this can, 2 vials of blood that just filled up inside my leg. I couldn't move it. It was just like it was on a hinge, just moving back yep. and forth. It was yep. disgusting. But the doctor that I saw out there, he does the surgeries for like the San Diego Chargers and when WWE guys come around. So that's why I immediately went to him, and he told me that was the worst knee injury he's ever seen. And wow. so him saying that and then immediately telling me wrestling is no longer an option for you. Walking is going to be a challenge for you in wow. the future. So
Why does it seem like those stories always happen? Like you hear that, you know, you can never wrestle again, you can never play football again, whatever it is, and then you see Adrian Peterson like killing it the next year.
Well, they were right as far as I was concerned because I never played football again. Well,
yeah, but I mean, you hear that a lot, and I think the injuries look the same, but it goes to show you everyone's made differently, and everyone heals differently, and things like that. So it's kind of like, yeah, mentally it messed with you, and you got with the rehab, and I mean, just if anyone's not seen your matches, just go to look at it. They'll go, you never tell you had this injury, you know?
Right.
I was going to say that too. Normally, when somebody has an injury of that magnitude, mm-hmm. even with me, I did try to play. I went through summer spring drills that next year, and I could just never get it. I was too. I don't know if I was too afraid, but I didn't want to go through that again. Yeah. So
it picks up your confidence.
It does. Yeah.
So you had a bad injury before, right?
I had a fucking heart attack.
Yeah.
This guy.
I fucking died. You fuckers over here talking about knees. I'm like, I died. Shut up.
But didn't you have like a shoulder thing too as well?
Yeah. I actually still got a little twinge or something going on, but I think we've got that taken care of.
Yeah. So. Do you see what I have to deal with every week with this guy? He's like,
did you have an injury too?
Whatever. Right. The heart attack. No, I said, didn't you? Like, I knew he did. But the heart attack, though, yeah. So that had to really mess with you as far as...
It still does, honestly. Yeah. It's like, it depends on, it's like, I know I'm good for about X amount of minutes, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, once we start settling down, then I start to pay attention to, like, my heart rate. Mm-hmm. But everything is always checked out great. It's like, anytime I go to the cardiologist or like, do whatever, like, he's always like, Randy, you look boring. You know, so I'm like, that's good. You know?
Yeah, right.
So, but I haven't had an issue. I haven't had an issue since. So it's not something that's really affecting me. It just affects my confidence.
Yeah, and honestly, you seem like you're in the best shape of your life. Really, I mean,
I've dropped 31 pounds only because it was like, it's kind of a messed up situation. It's like my ex-wife actually does a bunch of my sonograph or my echoes.
Oh, nice
that stuff. So it's like, and then her buddy's the cardiologist. So my cardiologist is like, Randy, it's like, look, you got to drop that belly fat or I'm going to do something. We're going to drop it for you.
Mm.
So, and I didn't even know what that would entail.
Right.
I didn't want it.
You didn't want
it. I was like, you know what? It's been fun while it lasted. Now right. I cut down on the burgers and, you know, whatever. So I've dropped like 31 pounds. And honestly, I feel a lot better.
Yeah.
But now I honestly find myself kicking myself in the ass because I'm like, man, if I could have just did this earlier,
mm-hmm.
I probably could have been having really good matches and not been so sloppy,
right?
You know,
right,
because it's like when you're out of shape, dude. It's like like this dude's a stud. It's like I've watched him go and just go and go and go. Me, it's like I'm good out the gate. You know what I'm saying? But then after a few minutes, I'm like, hey kid, you know what I'm saying?
Let's go home.
You know, right. He's like, hey, hold on. I'm like, hey, how about we start off slow and taper off?
Right,
you know. Right. So, but now it's like. What really kills you going back to the injuries is like you start feeling better, you start looking better, you start being like, oh, I still got a couple more years in the tank,
yeah.
right? And right. then something like a shoulder happens, you're like, fuck, yeah. you know, it's like I'm right there. It's like I finally achieved where I wanted to be, and then it's like that match, you realize it's like your shoulder's jacked,
yeah,
you know. So it's yeah. It's a little disheartening, but it's pretty cool to watch this dude here kind of step in and be like, you know, take on Mike Hayes and his craziness. So it's fun to watch. It's really fun to watch.
He's definitely fun to watch. Him and LJ both. Like we discussed this the last time. Like if I had to pick, I think it was JK that asked the question. Who out of the current crop of OVW superstars do you see making to NXT within the next 2 years? And immediately, without hesitation, I was like, Randall Floyd, Logan James, because yeah. you can see the love they have for the business while they're doing it.
Right.
And Logan, man, I don't know. Bravo to him, because I never in a million years would have considered him like as a heel. He's been making that. He's been working that. He's been making right. that work.
But yeah. it's like, and I'm not just saying it because he's here.
No, you said it when he wasn't here.
But yeah. But the difference between Logan James and Randall Floyd, and it's no disrespect to LJ because he's a hell of a wrestler,
mm-hmm.
but he's a hell of a worker.
Mm-hmm.
Two totally different things.
Yeah,
are you following me?
Yeah.
So the thing is in your other question about who I could see doing like an NXT or like getting signed, and it's not to rain on people's parade, but fuck that. It's like right now being indie's where it's at. I'm mm-hmm. telling you, it's like I've always been an indie guy from the day that I sat down with Randy Orton and they were like, here's developmental deals. I don't want it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like you could do your own thing right now and come out way ahead.
Well, Cody Rhodes proved that. I mean, Cody's proven that.
They just sold out 10,000 seat arenas.
Yeah.
With nothing but indie guys.
Right.
Nothing but indie guys.
Yeah.
If that doesn't tell you something, yeah.
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 And they sold out the whatever little place. I mean, it was like a few thousand or whatever it was. But in New Orleans, I mean, yeah, everybody's there for WrestleMania. But that show they did there, I mean, it was a Ring of Honor show. But at the same time, it was all indie. It was an indie show. I mean, Ring of Honor has some kind of a, you know, name to it, but it's not.
It's indie.
It's still indie,
it's,
right?
It's still indie.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, it's like the Revival.
Mm-hmm.
Love those guys. I loved them before they got signed. Mm-hmm. Like when they were indie guys. Loved right. them, right? They go to NXT, put them together, do the thing. Awesome tag team. Like brought back my love of tag team wrestling. And then they get called up. What the fuck happened?
Right,
you know,
right.
So it's like, is that?
I'll tell you what happened. They really got wrestled. They wrestled on NXT on an NXT house show last night. That's what happened.
Did they?
Yeah, they the undisputed era laid out an open challenge and was like, "We're the greatest tag team in all of WWE. We're the top guys in NXT." And then their music hit, and they come out and challenge them to a match.
I would much rather see them back on that product.
I agree.
Much rather.
Well, here's. Perfect example. So I'm at the Access. I'm in line. Paige is getting. Go. No, but this is it shows you how they what, about them. I'm in line.
So me and Paige were hanging out.
No, me and Paige were hanging out. I was in line to meet Paige, get a picture taken with Paige. Well, they cut it off at like a certain time. They said, "Oh, she's done," and they replaced it with a Revival. I was like 10 people away. Everyone else in line behind me just kind of they moved, and there's only a few people that left for the Revival. I go up there and I'm joking with them, going, "Well, I mean, I wasn't expecting getting a picture taken." Or I said, "You're not as pretty as the person I was going to get taken with." They go, "What do you mean we're not pretty?" You know, they were just joking around with me. It was fun. So I get the picture going or whatever. But you could see like the crowd just kind of disappeared because half of them wanted to stay and the other half was, "Oh, I don't want Revival,"
well,
and they walked away.
Seen everything Paige's got.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But what was crazy though is it shows you that's what the product did to them. Like they went up and it didn't. It should make them even more of a bigger star, and they didn't.
Right.
It hurt them because of where they put them at. If they went straight in and gave them the titles or whatever, that's what they should have done. You know, I understand they had an injury. I get that. So that kind of probably their plans changed. But they're still back now that they're back on Raw. They're doing. Little matches or barely doing. You said NXT house show.
Yeah, they.
You know,
but from what I understood, they had a 5-star match with Adam Cole and
they probably did.
And the guys. So yeah, I just wish the WWE, while we're on this tangent for a second, didn't feel like they had to push up so many stars every year. And that feels forced. I didn't agree with Andre, Cien, Almas, Alberto Del Rio, Gonzalez being called up. Like I didn't think he was ready just yet. I mean, I'm a fan. I have the right to my own opinion. The Revival, they did deserve to get called up, but just like Randy said, their element, the NXT was their element, and I think it's kind of cool that Triple H has created this environment where it's okay if you don't ever leave there. You know, it's okay if you stay there. It's almost like a disappointment if you get called up sometimes.
I think because of the generation that I grew up in,
mm-hmm.
and like Al had a big meeting with us whenever all this happened.
Yeah.
And he said something that I've been trying to preach to a lot of the new kids. There's nothing wrong with being a local celebrity.
No,
Jerry Lawler made a freaking ton of money.
Yeah.
He waited until 93 before he ever signed with WBF.
Right. That guy sold out Memphis. I mean, sold out the Coliseum when Elvis couldn't sell it out.
Right.
So it's like, to me, there's nothing wrong with staying at NXT
mm-hmm.
and being that top tier tag team to where they're going to move you over here, ruin your gimmick.
Yeah.
And then it's like, now what are you doing? Nothing. Right.
Well, because the tag team division was so, that's why it was wrong, because the tag team division of the WWE was so deep, they came up and they'd become just another name. If they would have waited for some of them to get older or to get in, I don't want anybody to get injured, but for something like that to occur, it would have been perfect for them to come up. But at the moment, it's been the most stacked it's been in a while.
Well, here's also the problem with the tag team division. Just make the tag team division one division and put it on one show or the other. Raw, because it's 3 hours.
Yeah, I don't hate that idea.
The double champions is not – just. They have too many titles anyways, but just put everybody on Raw, make that the tag team, make that be the only tag team champions, and that's it. And then you can have a better division. You get everybody get lost and going back and forth who's what, and then you think, well, yeah, but that helps get more people over. No, it doesn't hurt them, because there's more opportunities out there for them to get a title, and yet everybody gets lost. Who cares about the SmackDown champions? No one cares about that.
Right.
That literally at WrestleMania, that was the go pee match. Let's go pee. Like, no one cared about it. Let's go take a piss. Like, they didn't care. They cared about the Braun Strowman one. Why? Because of the way they built that up. They didn't care about that match was actually, look at all the workers that were involved in that. That was a great workers.
Yeah, it was.
Right, but speaking of workers, so I always ask this. I've never asked you. Because to me, no. To me, this tells a lot about the personality of a worker. So, like, three dudes who you would want to work that aren't WWE.
WWE?
They can work anywhere else that aren't on the main roster. Anybody.
Oh, man.
Legit.
That's tough. I mean, that's really tough because I don't necessarily follow a ton of wrestling outside of NXT and WWE. So, and a lot of the guys are getting swallowed up by NXT.
No. NXT is included. NXT is included.
It's not main roster WWE.
Not main roster.
Oh man, there's a few people. What's the guy's name? Just came up. CJ3.
EC3.
I know he's a former OVW guy. That's somebody. Mm-hmm. The guy seems like he's a workhorse. He's like he's a monster. That'd be somebody I think would be really fun and nice, intense, really quick-paced match. That's something you can really get in and just have a lot of fun with. And him being a former OVW guy could be something, too, where you just go in there. You don't talk until you're inside the ring, which is what I love to do.
That's a key thing there, because there was a podcast where I think Daniel Bryan and Jericho was on something talking about they were supposed to have the – Daniel Bryan or Jericho was supposed to show up for if Shane couldn't wrestle or whatever, it was going to be a surprise. And then they said they wouldn't, Jericho wouldn't have got there until right before the build time. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, they were talking about, well, we go out there and we would have to call it on the fly. Well, apparently Sami Zayn can't do that. And you think he's a top star. Mm-hmm. And it was like, he has to do everything ahead of time.
You would be so surprised how many guys that I've been in a ring with that can't do that.
Really?
That's happened. That happened on TV to me one time where I'm not going to bury anybody.
Yeah,
that's okay. Say it's Ricky Chevy.
No.
Oh, you said on TV. I'm sorry.
It was supposed to be myself and Chris Silvio for the TV title. And it was one of those deals where everybody was out around the ring, right?
Yeah.
And I was standing in the middle of the ring with Dean Hill. And it was supposed to be – and. You're going to defend TV title right now,
right?
Against Silvio. We had it. We already knew what we were doing. We got it. We're good.
Okay.
He said, "You're going to defend a TV title right now against Mitchell Huff." No. No. And then I was like, "Well, honestly, blah blah blah. I'm trying to fix it." Nope. Mitchell Huff. And I'm like, that's not right. Right? So he was like, ring the bell. He looks at me, I look at him, hey brother, this is what we're doing. So yeah, but that was one of the only times I was legit knocked out in the ring.
Yeah.
Legit knocked out. So yeah. And I even called the spot.
Wow.
Yeah, but yeah, it was awesome. But to Mitch's credit, he can walk and talk, so it was great. But you wouldn't be surprised how many guys who you would be like, "Oh, that guy," and you'd be like,
"But see that." And of course, Rip trained both of you guys, right? I mean, Rip trained you a little bit.
I was actually trained by Danny.
Danny, so, yeah, that's right, Danny himself. So, well, Danny's old school, anyways.
Yeah.
So that's the old school way of training. That's what I know. That's the way Al trains for sure.
But also, when I started, we were in separate dressing rooms. A lot of people don't understand that. Yeah, like, we were in opposite dressing, and that's and what, we would come out, and the ref would tell us to finish.
Yeah.
Oh well, what? Okay, you're going over with blah blah blah. Oh, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
How long? Okay.
I've heard Austin talk about it a lot because he was on that loop with the whole Memphis and Evansville and all that.
Uh-huh.
And he says he pretty much is like, you call that, go out there and call it, call the match, and you know, you're right. You don't know your finish until you come out there sometimes. And
no.
You that's what you do. You just go with it.
I've legit went out, locked up, and introduced myself as we locked up. No, legit what you did.
Right.
You locked up, and they could tell if you could work by your lockup.
Now, have you experienced that yet, where you've never talked to the person and went straight out there and had to match and had to just call it like that?
Michael Hayes and I just did that.
Sorry, yeah. There you go.
Yep. Al gave us the finish of the match, and I went upstairs back to where I usually sit in my little corner, kind of getting myself ready, headphones on, look down, and it's intermission, so there's one more match before mine's on. So I walk downstairs, and I say, hey, man, you ready? He's like, yeah, let's do this. That was it.
Just messing, kid.
That's good stuff like that. I mean,
crazy though, because you would think that it's a wrestler. You think that would be synonymous. A wrestler would know how to go out there and do that. But then again, you would think that a host would know how to talk to him. We know that's
whatever.
Not always.
Listen, so whatever. So it's one of it's one of the things though. Honestly, it's. Kind of when people say, "Oh, it's predetermined," a lot of it is really not. I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know what I mean? That's the whole wrestling fake thing always pissed me off because it's like, yeah, it's. But so is a movie you watch. I mean, come on. But it's just. But there's a lot of it that's not predetermined.
What do you mean wrestling's fake?
I said people say that.
Oh, okay. Well, those people are idiots.
I legit lost the TV title being knocked out. I was supposed to keep that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's what happened.
Right. It's right. So I mean, but it just goes to show you that, you know, when you go out there and call the match off the fly, it's not predetermined. You're just going as you're dancing basically. You're just going with it. You know.
But at the same time, as dumb as it sounds, you're dancing to the beat of somebody else's drum.
Yeah,
because you have to listen to where they want you to go.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and unless somebody has taught you that,
mm-hmm.
you'll never get it. Because it's like, okay, this is our match. We're going to go out, and this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're feeding them pizza that night. They may want burgers.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So you go out there, and you're just like, and,
that's a good idea. Like that.
You know, and they're just like, this is not what I wanted right now.
Right.
It's not what I wanted.
And you got to be able to take that in and change and go with the flow. Exactly.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
The best match that shows that is Rock and Austin, or not Rock and Austin, but Rock and Hogan at WrestleMania 18. I mean,
Toronto.
It was completely Toronto, completely different.
Yeah.
Switch. And Lawler said that on our show. He said that was the best match, one of his favorite matches he's ever called. He said because it literally was changed, and he said that was not the way it was planned. He said you watched them two professionals change the match, call it from the fly, and they just went with what the crowd wanted.
But
and,
it goes back to those are workers.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
they understand
absolutely.
How to work, not just wrestle.
Yeah.
They know how to
work. Well, Hogan is a worker. He's not a wrestler. Right. He's a worker.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I'd like to see his bank account.
Oh, yeah, right.
Being the shits, like yeah. everybody says he is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, you know, but you're right. Working, there's a difference. And you can look at the roster right now and pick a worker I mean, as much as people boo him, much as you don't like him, I mean, Roman Reigns is a worker. I mean, the dude can work. I mean, turn off his mic. He really can. He can work. He gets, of course, he just gets a bad rap because they all wanted Daniel Bryan in that spot. That's it. That was it.
That's not why I don't like him. I don't like him because he doesn't entertain me.
Oh.
I mean, his finishing move is him pretending
to
punch somebody. And then his little, I could do that stuff.
I hate his finishing move. That's his worst. He should just do the spear and like a power bomb or something.
I want to see stuff that I can't do. And I can walk up to Randy right now and pretend.
Oh, you got
to. Oh, I know. You're better at doing that than me.
All right,
I'm just saying that. I just same with Dean Ambrose. And I just, there's just nothing about him that interests me. And I'm not. I don't know. I guess I just have a peculiar taste when it comes to watching wrestling.
That's a lot of time it's character, though, too. Workers and character, like, there's two different
yeah.
things as well.
I mean, it could be just his character.
You can say that, right?
I mean, yeah, well, I mean, and there's a lot of guys who have been called up that I've had to misprivilege of working
yeah.
at some point in time, like years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's if you find guys who've been working as long as me, we've worked AJ when he was working NWA Wildside.
Yeah.
Like, we all worked together. And Dean Ambrose, when he was doing the stupid
up in Cincinnati
weed eater shit,
yeah.
You know, he was doing hardcore.
Johnny Moxley.
Johnny Moxley, yeah.
So he was doing all that stuff. So when I see, when I see Dean Ambrose, I'm like, you're the same guy that did the weed eater gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like,
The thing with Dean and me, I can pinpoint it with Dean. I can't really, well, I guess I did with Roman a little bit. It's he's a little bit too cartoony for me. But with Dean, it's he's just so twitchy. And I just, I flicked people like that in the head in high school that got on my nerves like that, well, for just being twitchy. I just don't care for him.
But no, but what's his name? Brian Pillman was like that too. You know, and that's kind of...
Please don't put them in the same sentence.
No, but they were. But, of course, the difference with Brian Pillman, he was a loose cannon, I'm using quotation marks, because he just – the air was different then. It wasn't overproduced. It wasn't – he could do what he wanted to do for the most – somewhat and get away with it, where Dean is kind of scripted and overproduced and, you know, and all that. So some of that's the problem too as well. But I'm not a – we talked about this. I'm not a – out of the Shield, Seth is my guy. It's not those other two. So that brings me. You kind of asked him a question. I think you said EC3. Was there anybody else?
Right. I was going to get back to that, and he answered one of them. Chris Silvio.
Yeah.
That'd be somebody I would really like to work with. When we had, I believe it was the February SNS when you were champion. Silvio came in, and I got the opportunity to watch him.
You worked with him that night, right?
Correct.
I worked with Chris a bunch. Yeah. Like I, he's probably one of my favorite guys to be in the ring with. And he's something special for a smaller guy.
Yeah.
He's really something special because as small as he is, he still makes it believable.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. Yeah.
Really, really good. And, just a cheap plug because his wife, Lucy Blossom, just put out a book today. You can get it on Amazon. It's called, Baking to a New Beginning. So you guys can go pick that up. I told her I would plug that on the thing. But no, Chris is awesome.
We'll tweet out a link later too.
Chris is awesome. So yeah, I think you and Chris would tear the fucking out.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. I've been to a couple of seminars of his, and I kind of got the opportunity to work with him a little bit, standard tie up stuff, kind of chain, and get the opportunity to learn from him. And being in the ring with him, I think would be. One, it would be a ton of fun, but at the same time, as we're moving, I know that I'm going to be learning new things every step of the way.
Yeah, right.
Different positioning, whatever it may be, I can feed off of Chris and be able to learn that, and that's somebody I would really like to work with.
So have you watched any Omega stuff, any Omega matches?
I was thinking of him little bit. It's been a while since I've seen some of his stuff. I haven't seen anything recently. I wanted to watch the Jericho Omega thing. I never did. And Jericho was another one that came to mind. Somebody that would be a ton of fun to work with, especially what he's doing now, I think is pretty great. But no, I haven't gotten the opportunity to see any really Omega stuff recently. I watch a lot of super old school stuff. Johnny Saint, Fit Finley, Regal. I watch a lot of Regal stuff. I'm kind of obsessed with William Regal.
He's a good worker, too.
And Fit Finley.
Yeah, he's a good worker.
Even recently, I've kind of felt myself kind of adapting Fit Finley's style a little bit. Just minor things from the way he gave a hip toss to the way he gave a back body drop. Just kind of things like that. Chain wrestling. I'm a huge fan of chain wrestling.
Dude, you have to check out some Billy Robinson.
I was going to say Billy Robinson.
Yeah.
I got a lot of stuff from him. I'm constantly on the phone with Rip saying, hey, who are some guys I can look at? I'll send him a match and say, hey, what are key points I can look for in this match? And usually, since it's super old school stuff, you know, 30, 60-minute matches, so 30 to 60 minutes later, Rip will get a hold of me just with a paragraph, just pinpoint stuff. Hey, watch this. Find out, or here's why he did that. Whatever it may be, and I think that was huge for me, especially starting out. One of the first things I asked Rip was, "Hey, who are some guys that I should look at?" And he started just rattling off the most amount of names: Bob Orton, Dick the Bruiser. He said Billy Robinson, a bunch of catch wrestling type guys, Johnny Saint, to look at, and he was huge on all of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So. From the very start, from you know, getting to OVW, I'm constantly studying this stuff, watching these guys, YouTube, and I'll either call or text Rip. I was living in Indianapolis at the time, so we could meet up every once in a while. Yeah. And get the opportunity to go over that and just get his feedback on learning how to work, essentially. And that's the type of guy Rip is he wants you to call it on the fly. So when we're in training, every once in a while, he'll grab somebody, usually me and somebody else, and say, go 15 minutes. That's all he'll say. And you just go in there, and you're like, oh, crap, what do we do? But now it's got to the point where whoever he puts me with, I know exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's just some minor filling in between that I'm still working on, some a little bit more faster-paced kind of stuff. Rip does that all the time to us.
When you brought up the Jericho Omega thing, asking about him, is – I've realized because Omega works a certain way, he's fast paced, all that. But Jericho's kind of old school, and they, you know, Jericho's older too. And it was neat that he said Jericho was able to basically help Kenny slow down in that match, and it worked a different style, and he worked Jericho's style because he had to. But it made it look like Jericho's keeping up with Kenny just because of how brilliant he was to put that match together. Of course, supposedly, I'm sure it was, most of that was called on the fly. I mean, it was all done right there. You know, you bring working. You're asking Rip about becoming better at your craft and all that. When it comes to promos, though, have you looked at? Because I know Randy's, you've done great with promos. I mean, we talked about last time, I was studying that and getting the craft of there. Have you gone to that area? Have you looked into certain people you're kind of modeling after that?
Absolutely. When I was growing up, promos were huge.
Yeah.
Early WCW. WWF when it was starting, so 96, 97 era when I started watching wrestling. So,
You got that.
6 or 7 years old, seeing all this stuff and watching these guys, and that's what immediately attracted me to guys like Randy Savage, who's my all-time favorite wrestler, were his promos. And then as you get older, my dad ended up giving me some tapes, and I can watch old like pay-per-views and Randy Savage just going nuts on these promos. So when I first got to OVW, we practiced promos every single day when we were in there.
Yeah.
And I went in there and did, I guess, a half-hearted Macho Man impression to do my very first promo in there. And Rip ended up enjoying it and said, keep doing that, just don't be so Randy Savage. So I kind of made it my own, but I essentially am trying to do something like that,
mm-hmm.
but making it my own. So yeah, promos are a big part of it, and they're a giant part of wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge part you don't really see anymore. And being in contention for the heavyweight title, you get the opportunity to go out there and talk a lot more. So you really got to be able to pick up on this. And
so are you more of a, plan ahead script? Or are you just, go with it?
Just go with it.
Okay.
When we do, like, promos in class, somebody will yell at a topic and you got to just talk.
Yeah,
you got a minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it may be.
So Rip does that in his class too.
Yeah,
okay.
We do that in there.
I know Al used to do that. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, I've been getting a lot of promo segments on TV, and it's Al kind of give you the quick rundown as far as the business, the points you want to hit,
mm-hmm.
and then he's just, all right, go out there, and then before you know it, we're already out there, and Mike Hayes is yelling in my face, and at that point, I'm just running off of emotion. So whatever he says to me, I'm getting mad. I'm really getting mad. And just using that and being able to fire right back at him, no problem, is what I'm reaching for.
I want to hear your Randy Savage impersonation.
Oh no!
it's been a while. This one might be rough. Let's see what's a good line.
All right, don't look at him.
I won't.
You can look at me. It's fine.
Yeah, baby, the cream always rises to the top. Yeah.
All right.
It's not bad.
Here we go.
It's been a while since I punched that one out, but
when I was
kind of breaking out of my shell in OVW, I suppose, there came a point where I just started talking like that at all times. So we're training, and that's the only way I'm talking to people, and it just kind of made people laugh, and it made me so much more comfortable.
Whatever works. Guys, I mean, right? I say, go with it.
I think he did it so much. I think Randy Savage's voice. Literally, like, change became that raspy voice or whatever.
Rip tells that story all the time. Rip used to Randy Savage is who trained Rip Rogers, and he tells stories about Randy Savage all the time and how they lived together. I think they had an apartment together. He's there for like 3 or 4 years.
I heard him on the
and
McAfee's
he
show.
He always talks about it, and he's like, I only saw Randy out of character one time.
Yeah.
And it was, he said, Randy got a new little dog and ended up dying.
Yeah.
And he said that he kind of cried and said something out of that voice, and then he was like, huh? And then Randy Savage goes, well, I guess I got to get a new dog. Yeah. And they went right back into it.
I think he showed it on McAfee's show, too. I remember that story. Yeah, that's funny. Speaking of him, we'll get to him. I got to ask a question about that. But first, I want to talk about Collar and Elbow. Go to collarandelbowbrand.com. Use promo code Ringside. And you save 10%, and you help the Ringside podcast out. So collarandelbowbrand.com, the best wrestling apparel today. So, Pat McAfee. Uh-huh. I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan. So, Pat McAfee, former kicker for the Colts. I was shocked when he was retiring. I was like, "What in the hell are you doing? Like, you could have 10 years making $4 million a year, whatever it was, just to kick the ball. Like, you're the best punter in the league. What are you doing?" And he said in an interview that he wants to go after his dreams, and he wants to do a lot of other stuff. And one of his dreams is to become a professional wrestler. Mm-hmm. So he's been training in Indianapolis, and maybe here too. I don't know. You'd be able to tell me if he's here too or not. But in Indianapolis with Britt Rogers for the last maybe 2 years, I guess, or a year and a half?
We started with him. It was this past July.
Okay.
And he did it for maybe a month or two, and then he ended up opening a Barstool Sports Heartland there in Indianapolis. But first and foremost, I know Pat McAfee and Logan James doesn't. I just wanted to get that one out there.
Logan said he says you give him a lot of crap because, you know, he's a Colts fan too, and he said on the show.
We spent a lot of time in the ring. When we're having encounters face to face, we're supposed to be serious, and I'd say something like, "You don't even know Pat." And just try to get him to laugh while we're in the middle of the ring.
That's great stuff.
To make it look like I'm being a tough guy. So we started working with Pat. It was Rip's a maniac. It might have been like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I get a text from Rip, and it's a picture of him and Pat McAfee. And so I'm just like, all right, cool. You ran into Pat McAfee. Awesome. And then the next day at training, I got to get up. I'm still living in Indianapolis at the time, so I got to get up in about three hours so I can head down to Louisville to make it for Matt's class at the time and then train with Rip. So we get in there, and Rip shows up, and he goes, "You get my picture?" And I was like, "Yeah, I responded to it, Rip." And he goes, "Yeah, Pat wants to learn how to wrestle. I want you to help." All right, I'm in. Awesome. That's all you had to say. So he had Kevin Giza and I were living in Indianapolis at the time, and we rode down here all the time together. So we got to create a little bit of a bond, Kevin and I. But he asked him to help out with it too. So he's in there. I pick up Giza at his house. It might be 7 or so in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
That same Monday. So we're there, and we're driving up. We get to this big house. Rip's already in the driveway trying to figure out how to work the gate code. Cannot figure it out. So I get out, and I end up walking up there, and he just hands me the note that has the code on it, and I just type it in. Of course, we're in. So we drive all the way back. Pat's got this real big house, nice big long driveway that leads back to this huge giant open field that I only assume he punted endless footballs in. But there's this big garage, and Giza and I pull up in there, and there's just Pat leaning up against the ring, sitting there. So it was kind of surreal. Like, we didn't think this was real until we saw it.
Right.
And then Pat's just sitting there, and he just waves at us, and we jump in there, and we're hanging out with Pat McAfee, rolling around with him. So it was a pretty incredible experience, and I'm still incredibly thankful for it, that Rip gave me that opportunity, that Pat gave us that opportunity to work with him, make some connections through there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, WWE saw all that stuff, so
yeah.
I got the opportunity to be seen, I guess, by WWE through that, which led to some more opportunities for me to get seen by guys like Gerald Briscoe, Jim Ross, and J.J. Dillon, who I got to put on a tryout match for that same month out in Iowa. So that created a lot of opportunities for me that are still kind of peeking their heads around.
Now, do you still interact with Pat now and help train now, or
no? Right now, he's doing for WrestleMania. He got to do that NXT pre-show, which was awesome. He killed it, and then that opened up another opportunity for him to do the NXT. I believe it's TakeOver in Chicago.
Yeah.
That's coming up. So he's doing the pre-show for that as well. But he's super busy now. He's got NXT stuff going on. Like I said, he runs Barstool Heartland there in Indianapolis. And then just endless projects that he does with his podcast. He's got Sirius Radio that he works with. So he hadn't had the opportunity to really work with us since maybe late August. So that's really kind of the last time we kind of had sort of interaction, I suppose. But I mean, I still got his phone number. I can text him, I guess. I still got the the code to his gate, so I can just show up whenever I want, I suppose.
Right. Well, I guess, is Rip still training him?
I don't know what's going on with I don't believe so. I think he's more so leaning towards doing like hosting type stuff.
Oh, okay, okay.
So I think he's wanting to get into some commentating. I mean, he's a talker.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Well, it would fit, and he can always, you know, having enough basic background, he can always do a couple bumps or two.
Yeah, and the thing was, when we jumped in there, the first thing he did was Rip said, "Hey, Randy, go have a 10-minute go 10 minutes with him," and then so I went 10 minutes with him and just called out whatever we're doing, and as we're doing it, I'm telling him the steps to the headlock takeover, and he's like, "Huh?" And I just flip over me, man, you're good. And I just land, and then, all right, work up. And tell them how to work up as we're doing it. Keep your hands together. All this good stuff as we're sitting in there just having a 10-minute match. First time I met the guy, and we're beating him up. And then at one point, Rip just yells, "Light him up," and we just – all of us just took turns chopping him. It was a really good time.
are you a fan of him at all, or a fan of the Colts? Or are you a fan of, you have a team that you root for?
Growing up, I was a big 49ers fan.
Okay.
Steve,
so he would be an enemy then. He would be, so that's why you would be a fun light.
Once I got to college, I went to college in Indianapolis, so I kind of became a Colts fan at that point.
Okay, okay.
So it was the only thing on.
That's true.
We got Colts games. A friend of mine that I wrestled with in college, his dad had season tickets, so we would go to the games every once in a while. And I always knew of Pat. Bob and Tom Radio, it's based out of Indianapolis, and it's really big there, and he started doing comedy bits off of there. And just kind of started really I really liked the guy from the start.
He was doing comedy too for a while when he was when he was actually, you know, like his off season and stuff. He would go do comedy shows, kind of like what Dolph Ziggler does too. It's like weird. I've never heard of his stuff, but heard he's funny.
Yeah, he would go do open mics, just downtown Indianapolis, Broad Ripple, wherever it may be. Just kind of figuring out, because he knew he wanted to get into either wrestling or some sort of radio, is what he was telling us. And what I was getting to with the 10-minute match that Rip just had us put on, which eventually we led into just having a 30-minute match, Pat and I, he picked it all up really quick. So anything I told him, the next time we came around to it, he was already into it. He's an athlete. He's a real athlete. Guy didn't even play football, I don't think, until high school, maybe college.
Wow.
He was a soccer player.
I heard that. That's wild.
So he got he accidentally kicked a football one time and someone saw it. So that he got so he
changed his life.
Yeah, changed his life. So now he he gave up the the $30 million leg, whatever it may be, to pursue his wrestling dream. And
you gotta respect
that. It's really cool. It's been awesome watching him come along. I listen to the podcast, I follow him, Instagram, whatever it may be, watching him come along, and every once in a while he'll give me a nice shout out, so that's always nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now I know you said this when you were on the show last time, Randy. You mentioned that, you know, you were, I think you even brought up Randall's name and then Logan James, and that you've shared, you know, different kind of, you know, wisdom to the young guys and say, hey, you know, sell yourself short going out there and stuff like that. Is there anything, you know, you've, like, in the recently, since that last time, you've kind of said to Randall or anyone else that you've, you know, kind of give your wisdom out
the
there?
The dude's freaking killed it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to be really careful, because especially whenever you're this new.
Yeah.
And that good. Because what's going to happen is you're going to have vets, you know, like, I've never made it here to the very top, but I've done some really cool shit. You know what I'm saying? Some stuff where I'd be like, oh, I did this show and I was hanging out with Maynard from Tool, or did this show and I got to hang out with that fucking Hall of Fame worker and pick his brain and this, that, and the other. But what I've learned over the years is when you're this at this stage of the game, you can't have too many people with their hands in the pot. And he's the pot. So the thing is to get that perfect mix, you can't have too many people throwing shit in it.
Right.
You gotta have you know, like one person, like a Rip Rogers, to be like, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then once Rip makes that base, then he can be like, okay, now I'm going to go over here, mm-hmm. and I'm going to see what they can add to it over here. But right. the last thing you want is three or four or five different people, blah, 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 do mm-hmm. this, blah, 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 do that, blah, 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 do that, because where his head is, even though he's an athlete, and even though he's picking it up probably a lot faster than any of us could have picked it up,
yeah.
to me, he's almost like a Kurt Angle. It's like he's getting it that fast,
yeah.
which is scary because he's moving at a mile a minute, where we had that time to where it's like we were not doing TV or anything for a year or better after training, mm-hmm. where they're just like, dude, you're good. Just throw him in there, you know? Yeah. So when you have somebody like Rip, just let Rip do with him what he's going to do. And mm-hmm. then once he's done with that, then go get advice from somebody else.
Yeah.
Not advice, but like Jim Ross would say, go learn another hold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go over here and learn something from that guy. And then what you do, by the time he's 10 years in, which I didn't realize anything about the business until I hit 10 years, I was like, oh, fuck, now I get it, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, once he hits that 10-year, then he's going to take Rip. He's going to take this guy. He's going to take this person. He's going to take that person. He's going to be like, that's who I am. And then that's how you create the perfect monster. So like I told you, and what I'm telling you, and I mean this, right? I mean this because it's like, I'm going to have somebody to watch when I'm done. Are you following what I'm getting yeah. at? So the thing is like, what I'm telling you is keep your ego in check
mm-hmm.
because at the speed you're progressing – it's like I've watched one other person who I was really close with. We all were awesome. Get to here, and then turn into something that I didn't like seeing him turn into
mm-hmm.
because he moved so fast. Mm-hmm. Right? Just be humble because the same people you see up on the way up, you're going to see them on the way back down.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
I've heard that.
So
one, yep.
always stay humble, but keep the ego in check because it's like. I'll tell you guys off air, but there's a project that I want to do because it's like I feel like no matter how long you're doing this, you can always learn something.
Yeah,
you can
absolutely.
Always learn more, no matter how good you think or how long you've been in a business. You right. can always learn more. And remember that. So with you, I really believe, honestly, I'm saying this, all of us,
mm-hmm.
the sky's the limit for you,
bro. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean that.
Sure.
You just got to keep it together.
Mm-hmm.
And don't believe – sometimes you just can't believe your own bullshit. You just got to yep. step back and be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this ride and just ride it out and see – and always be you. Mm-hmm. Always be you no matter what happens. Dude, you're going to do great. Like, you're going to do great, legit.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's good. I mean it's good advice. I mean for sure because I mean that's usually the problem. Like you're saying, you see guys they get to this, they just you know you wonder whatever happened to them. Well, you know they
listen
to
an asshole.
Me. Yeah,
that's what happened. They were yeah. an asshole.
Yeah. They listen or they listen to too many people and listen to the wrong you know
you
wrong
can't
people.
Do that.
So okay, so a couple final questions here. We're wrapping up. What I know you haven't wrestled very much, or haven't had many. Well, I mean you've had a lot, but not as many as maybe Randy over here has.
Right.
But what's so far your favorite match you've ever had?
Oh, boy. Favorite match I ever had, I think we talked about it earlier that February, SNS. Logan James and I believe that was the career match.
Yeah.
From start to finish, I had goosebumps in that match. And then when we got to that finish where LJ ended up finally going over on me,
mm-hmm.
And just the reaction of the crowd, like I teared up for the guy as
yeah.
he's covering me, and I'm covered in goosebumps, and just the whole time we're having – just the most amount of fun. That was a match at that point. Logan and I knew each other like the back of our hand. So it was, he likes to like at least piece some sort of thing together as we you know, before we're going out there, like, hey, I like to do this, blah, blah, blah. I was like, man, I already know. We're good.
yeah.
So we went out there and it's just a matter of, as we're going out, I'm like, hey, these are my, we had like 25 minutes or 30 minutes or something like that that they gave us. And I was like, hey, these are my four or five cutoffs that I'm going to hit at some point. We'll figure it out there. And then we just kind of went out there and just had fun. That's all it was. I wouldn't be surprised if we were both just smiling the entire time. It was that career match, against LJ is definitely probably it's got to be my favorite match that I've had so far. And granted, I haven't had very many. I'm still under a year, I suppose. So, but that's got to be tops for me. Close second has got to be that cage match that we had the following month.
Mm-hmm.
That is the same thing. It was just a ton of fun. We knew we didn't have to do a whole lot just because we had the big steel cage.
Right.
So it was, we're going to beat the hell out of each other and we're going to have fun while we're doing it. Basically, right. Kind of thing. So that's, those are up there, and those two.
And I was talking, we asked Logan about that, because I mean, you obviously don't train ahead of time for something like that, like a cage match. You don't get in there and practice in the cage. You just kind of go with it, right?
Right. I mean, we couldn't. They wanted us to get some practice with it, so they wanted to put it up first so that before the show, mm-hmm. we could kind of roll around and get a feel for it. I forget who shut that down, but the big cage, it had to be the main event. So we get out there. And I had Logan shoot me off and immediately busted my elbow on the big bar. And as we came back in, I took the bump, shoulder tackle, drop kick, whatever it was. And as I'm feeding up, I go, no more running spots. That hurt. And then he takes off immediately and does the same thing. So he's like, yep, I get you. I felt that. So
yeah.
It was, first time experiencing a cage like that. And, yeah, go to hit the road. I knew I wasn't going to have a ton of room, but I didn't think I was going to almost bust my elbow open.
Right.
And then you run into, I end up throwing him into the cage and it can be rough and he's already bleeding 3 minutes into the match. And, it was a moment where the ref was like, I don't know what to do. I need to call the match. And I picked him up. I ended up swearing at her just in the moment, but I go, he's fucking fine. And then I covered him and went back into it. My apologies for swearing, but
it's a rated R show.
Yeah. Oh, it is. We're rated R. I know he's been doing it the whole time. But
have you not been listening to the other Randy?
I'm typically not a guy that swears a whole lot. So
same.
He's been hanging around Rip too damn much.
I was gonna say you start talking you're around Rip. My goodness.
Start talking about Snaybits or something. So we never knew. We didn't know what we're going to really run into, and then we're hitting different spots off of that cage. We basically had limitless things to work with.
Yeah.
I knew going into it that I wanted to fall off the top. That was really about it. So we fell into that, and surprisingly, was the least painful bump of the match.
So you mentioned before, and I think I know one of your answers, but you talked about the three people that you would like to work with. But okay, so you get to choose any opponent. It could be big dead. We'll do dead or alive. One alive that you would love to have a match with. It could be main roster, WWE, whatever. Somebody that's alive today. You could actually still have a match with, mm-hmm. and then we'll pick someone who's dead who we can't have a match with anymore. Like you would love to. That'd be your dream fantasy.
Okay. I said earlier, Randy Savage is my all-time favorite. Right. That'd be somebody that in his prime, late 80s, I would love to get inside the ring with and just go. That would be an absolute dream come true. Mm-hmm. Obviously, can never happen. But that would be
maybe in a video game. Maybe in a video game.
The video game, yeah, I've done it plenty. That's the guy I always pick. It's always Randy Savage. It's the first guy I go to unlock. Randy Savage for sure. That guy, a guy that's passed away that I would love to work with. As far as alive, I don't want to be too cheesy or corny, but I can't wait to work with Logan James again. That's a guy that I've never had more fun in wrestling than I did with him.
Yeah.
I'm getting opportunities now to work with guys like Michael Hayes, Ryan Howe, Justin Smooth, those guys are a ton of fun to work with, but nothing's really compared to like the camaraderie that Logan and I had. I remember first day of training, showing up and seeing all the guys like Trevor Steele and Justin Smooth, all these mammoth dudes that at the time were a lot bigger than me. But I remember Logan James catching my eye, and I knew that was a guy that the very first day that I wanted to eventually work with. That was the guy that I knew that I had to beat inside of training all the time, that he was the workhorse. He was brand new at the time there, too. I don't exactly know how long he was in, but he was the guy that I noticed that was...
It almost sounds like healthy competition.
Right, that's exactly what it is. We're looking to outshine each other 100% of the time.
But at the same time, you're wanting each other to shine, too.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is pretty much what you had why the Attitude Era was so great. You had Austin, Rock, Triple H. All those guys were straight wanted to be the top guy, mm-hmm. but at the same time they wanted the other guy to do well too. So
right,
you know, that brought a good that's what made that product so good. Where you look at WCW, it was like everybody wanted to bury everybody. So.
But as cool as Randy Savage and Randall Floyd would be, tell me how cool Randall Floyd opposite Owen Hart would fucking be.
Oh my goodness,
Jesus Christ.
That was another one that I thought of. I watch a lot of Owen Hart stuff, and that's a guy I really enjoy watching too.
Yeah. You know, Owen was so – it's amazing he never got to be a champion, like WBA champion. But, I mean, he probably would have eventually if things had happened. But, man, it was just – he was such a great worker. He could – I mean, have you ever heard the story about him and Mick Foley, like, beating each other over with some popcorn and, like selling the stuff? Like, it was just – like, it's just – and the game, they made it a five-star match, like, with popcorn. Like, a big bag of popcorn, they were just hitting each other over the head with it and body slamming over it and just
– That Bret Hart, Owen Hart match from that WrestleMania.
Yeah. Was it WrestleMania 10? Yeah.
So good.
Oh, so good.
You can really
tell
how good of a worker he was, yeah.
Yeah. And everyone always gives him a bad rap for the whole Austin, you know, mishap at SummerSlam. And that was just a mishap. I mean, you know, everyone has – I mean, everyone makes mistakes. And But it's just – man, but I've never – that was the only bad thing I've ever seen him do. And that was just an accident. But you every day you look at him, he was just an amazing worker.
Right.
Owen was – I think Owen was better than Bret, honestly. Yeah. Bret was good at character and just getting over – But worker wise, Owen had him beat, and Bret would even tell you that. But Owen was a better worker than him, you know. That would be amazing. Yeah, you're right. That would be amazing. I think I would probably like that match over the Randy Savage. Yeah. No offense, I probably would like that match over. I didn't even think about it when you said that. Wow, that'd be awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and
I appreciate you guys having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you definitely have a future. Not only in OVW, but I mean, I would be surprised to see you in NXT, WWE, or Ring of Honor. I mean, you know, All In. Who knows? Maybe you'll be booked All In.
Hey, we can only hope. I do want to say this before we go. There's been times over the last 10, 15 years where I've fallen in and out of love with OVW. It's been good. Then it's been bad. It's been good. Then they hired Ricky Chevy, and of course, it was awful for a while. But what you and Logan have done this last 6 months, 8 months, has made me fall in love with it again. I really appreciate – I know you don't get to hear – or maybe you do hear it a lot, but I really appreciate what y'all have done because OVW has a piece of my heart. As me growing up around it, even back when it was over in Indiana, back when those wrestlers that first started in OVW were guys that when Jerry Lawler and them stopped touring in Louisville, kind of found their way over there and started that out. Right. Those were guys I grew up with. My uncle wrestled for Jerry Lawler growing up, so it was kind of a – you're not the only one that can name drop. So that kind of, you know, so as somebody who's got a vested interest in OVW, I really appreciate what y'all are doing because I can tell just by having y'all both on here, you all love the business.
Right.
You want it. You want to be the best.
You can see that.
And you
too.
Can see that.
Yeah. When somebody
you've talked the whole show, shut up. you can really see y'all's passion in the matches. And even just talking to you all, like, y'all are the most down to earth people.
Yeah.
But then you talk. I'm gonna smack the shit out of you. People want to know how come you guys. That's for me smacking them. No, it's not. But I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's exactly what we wanted to do. Royal had said it before, but this is one of the better locker rooms that OVW's had in a long time. And I mean, we see it as the guys too. I mean, we've got guys that are coming up. Like, I mean, Logan James and myself really putting in the work. And then you've got guys like. The bros are really coming along. Dustin Jackson is a guy. I mean, you guys talk about future NXT guys. Give him some time to really mold, and I think Dustin Jackson is going to be a guy that's going to be, once it clicks for him, he's going to be really, really good.
Yeah.
He's very athletic. Trains his ass off. He's in training. We get there early in the morning, and he's there with me, training before Rip's class, putting in the work. Same thing with a couple guys from the Void, guys that we expect to see doing some damage in OVW, and then hopefully in the future some at the NXT level. Chase Destiny, of course, and then he's brand new to it, but Nigel Winters is somebody that I think is really going to explode once he gets it. He's he's the guy that carries the head around. He's brand new. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him, but he's a
he's not, but I am.
He's a guy that I any chance we get, he's grabbing me and wanting to work in the ring before TV tapings. We call times at usually 4 or 4:30. He's always there. The second I get there, he grabs me and says, "Hey, let's chain. I want to roll around." And he's a big Johnny Saint fan too. And that's once he gets to really put that out there, he's somebody that's going to be dangerous in OVW as well. And he's still really young. Both those guys, when Chase is 21, Nigel's 18, Dustin I think is 20. So they give these guys the time, and the second it clicks for them, these guys are going to explode.
And the back up what you said about the local guys and that became your guys, you know, that's no matter who it was from OVW, if they showed up on WWE back in from 98 to 2000, whatever, it was like, oh, I want this guy to succeed. Even if their gimmick was terrible, even if you're just like, I want him to do well, mm-hmm. because you invested in them locally. And that's kind of the way we both feel about, you know, what's happening with OVW now is you're invested. Man, I want these guys to succeed. Not only are they good and they're going to succeed, but it's like, I want to see them go to that level. And I know we're blowing smoke up your ass a lot, but we really believe you are going to do that.
Appreciate it.
We want to thank everyone for listening. Appreciate the support. You can find us all on the podcast avenues, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or just Apple Podcasts. Or you can also just go to ringsidepodcast.com. And you can find us all on the social media, the Twitter, the Instagram, and the Facebook at Ringside Podcast. Individually, I'm at Daniel Spencer.
At Jeremy_CSC.
Now, where can they find you at, Randall?
The Instagram and the Twitter is at RandallFloyd_.
Okay. And then...
at our superstar.
Our superstar.
You're supposed to be prepared to know that. You're not supposed to ask them. You're supposed to know that.
I want them to say their own name. I could say it, but I mean, it has
where's
more
Ricky
power.
Chevy when you need him?
He still doesn't know his Twitter.
No, he doesn't.
He'll text me from time to time and be like, am I at it's Ricky Chevy OVW or am I just Ricky_Chevy now? I'm like, I don't know. I followed you a long time ago.
Right. You've been blocked. What are you talking about? All right, so thanks again, guys. We appreciate it. And as always, in the meantime, in between time.
Until next time, you can catch us ringside.
See ya.
Respect, 'cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No, they don't want none. No, they don't want none.